That's right, true believer. This week, it's an origin story on
Calling Son of the Atom!
Welcome to, the first episode or episode zero of Comics of the Atom. I believe that's the title we sort of decided on, right, Carson?
Oh, absolutely it is. I think we're definitely going to roll with that, especially now that we're live and you said it, we have to.
Yes. So my name is Michael Vaughn, and with me as always is the man of a million comics, Carson Woodder. I think, you know, I've known you for, I don't even know how many years now, honestly. It's been such a long time. But, you know, I don't know anyone else that knows more about comics than you do. So, thanks for kind of going on this journey with me. And the idea for this podcast is to, you know, try to take a story arc or a collection of work by some of our favorite artists and writers and sort of just go into a deep dive on that. Not only, you know, with the comics themselves, but, you know, like the history of like the writing and creative team and just, you know, kind of more exploring sort of the professional, you know, focus or, you know, area of what those people have done, you know, the timing of that comic, you know, how does it relate to like the current universe or, you know, what's happening in comics in general, what's happening in the media as a larger, you know, are there films or shows or, you know, whatever. So that's sort of the idea that we're going to try to do. What were your thoughts on that?
Oh yeah. I mean, just going back to how we know each other, we basically met in college. And yeah. You're the only other person who knew what in the world I was talking about half the time, mainly. I can't remember the exact year. It was probably around 06, 07, to put it in perspective. So there, it was kind of like almost a dark age in terms of comics coming up, because obviously the 90s and all that boom happened before the big movie boom.
Right.
So we had our celebrated books and writers back then, I'm sure. But yeah, I mean, there wasn't a lot of comic collectors and a lot of people talking about comics back then like there are today.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of crazy, honestly. Like, I mean, you know, when I saw Avengers Endgame last summer, that was the pinnacle of like, I did not think I would ever see anything like that on screen ever, you know? And it was such a magical, awesome moment, you know, when they all come together at the end and Captain America finally says, "Avengers Assemble." And you're just like, you've been waiting on that for like almost a decade.
And I remember just going back to, you know, what these movies mean to us. I remember like talking to you way back when, mm-hmm. before any of this was as big as it was. And I was like, man, wouldn't it be cool? Like, in Iron Man 1, if they had a post-credit sequence where, you know, we found frozen Captain America, and then all this stuff actually started to happen.
Yeah, yeah. That was, I guess I heard probably a rumor or something to stick around. I saw Iron Man by myself in Bloomington. I don't know why I wouldn't have gone and saw it with you. Maybe I was just like, I'm not sure how to feel about this movie, because Marvel was sort of hit and miss, right? You had the awful Fox properties like Fantastic Four and Ghost Rider and shit like that. I mean, maybe that came out. I can't remember. Anyway, we had gone through some up and downs. Daredevil.
Daredevil.
Yeah. That one. Ben Affleck is not doing so hot but in the superhero category. But yeah, I remember. And then when Nick Fury, and they, you know, they do that because of Ultimate Avengers, right? Like that persona, like they modeled Samuel L. Jackson on Nick Fury for that comic line. And I was just like, oh, he says an Avengers initiative. I was like, holy shit. Like this is, you know, it's been a crazy journey. I remember being in middle school and being made fun of, like in middle school, which is just crazy. Me made fun of for collecting like X-Men and those, you know, those X-Men trading sets and the Mark Bagley Spider-Man series, which was amazing. So yeah, I mean, it's just for both of us, it's been such a love and a love and obsession, very, I've known very few people that have that passionate love for this medium that you do. So it's it's awesome to try to do something like this and see if we can, I don't know, give back a little bit to the people that bring us so much joy and have brought us so much joy over the years. We were talking last time, and I was trying to remember my first comic that I bought. And I think you said you remember yours. I know mine was, I had to look it up, but I think it was X-Men 18. Oh, I should have looked it up before this, but now I, but anyways, the Jim Lee run era, and it's, you know, Sabretooth attacking Jean Grey. It's on a white background. And I bought that comic in middle school with my lunch money and a pack of, like, I mean, three or four pieces of, like, cotton candy Bubblicious gum, because it was, like, the hottest thing on the planet at that moment, at least in middle school world. And I treasured that comic. I mean, I lost the cover, got, you know, fell off eventually. And I'm sure if I went and dug through my long boxes, I could find it. But yeah, that was that's where it all started for me.
Yeah, for me, I mean, it was the death of Superman, like a lot of people.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The story of how I got that's actually kind of funny, because I can't remember if it was, I always forget if it was like 92, 93, or 94. Around that time, it was Christmas in my household, and Christmas Day rolls around. And what do I have sticking out of my Christmas stocking? A fourth print of Superman 75, folded in half so it fits in the Christmas stocking. That was my first comic ever, and I mean, it was like almost the perfect first comic, because you open up that issue and read it. I mean, not only is it an emotional journey for Clark Kent and Lois Lane, obviously, but everything, it's like an action movie put on a page. Everything's a splash panel in that comic. Pulled out 90s gimmicks. Like, if there ever was like one 90s comic done, it may be X-Men number one, but if there was two, it'd be that and Death of Superman, Superman 75. So that's like, that after that issue came out, I'm like, okay, I guess I started with comics. I thought I was done, because hey, Superman's dead. What's the point in getting another comic? Because how are they going to make him if he's dead? Was what was going through my head. So I was at Walmart one day. It's still back when you could get comics like at, you know, your grocery stores, your Walmart, right, and that stuff.
They were in like the magazine rack, yes, area.
And actually, yeah, like up front near the sales counters, they had like this, like it was like almost like a bag set. And it was the Funeral for a Friend run, basically. And I'm just like, what is this? Like, how is this book still going with his name on it if he's dead? And then, like, I just thought that was the dumbest thing ever at the time. Obviously, now they're well-respected and great reads. But I was at a flea market about another month later, and then I see, like, some dude has a spinner rack at the flea market, and it's Adventures Superman 500, 501, with all those, like, die-cut covers.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I remember those.
Those are the first appearance of Superboy and first appearance of Steel, so on and so forth. Well, I was like, Mom, I got to pick all these up. I'm sorry. I got to see what's going on now. There's four Supermen now. I got to see which one's the real Steel deal. So I picked those up, and I've been hooked ever since.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, I think, probably for both of us, too, and a lot of kids during that time. Like, the, you know, the comic books were one, you know, entry into the medium, but really, you know, we grew up in that era too, where they were making, you know, Batman the animated series obviously, like, changed everything, that what it meant to be like a cartoon and a serious cartoon and craft and art, and of course the X-Men cartoon, right, and the Spider-Man cartoon. I mean, there was like a ton of others. They were never as good as those three. I mean, Batman is like miles ahead of all that other stuff, right? I would say X-Men, it's definitely my second favorite. I don't know if it's as good as the Spider-Man one. Spider-Man one gets weird towards the end. I think, yes, like Mary Jane becomes like Hydro Woman or Hydro Man or some weird shit. I can't remember, but I remember being like very confused.
It turns into a completely different show, literally. It goes from Spider-Man to Spider-Man Unlimited. And I don't even ever find Mary Jane. I think they just forget.
Yeah, it's it was weird. Yeah. You know what's funny too, around that time is, like, you know, it's I guess it's like the 90s, you know, edge, right? We had like remember Marvel 2099. Of course they brought back Spider-Man 2099 pretty recently.
M2 or M squared, where they had like Juggernaut Jr. and all those characters.
Oh yeah.
Heroes Reborn, like,
yeah, I mean, that
I always say, if there was a gimmick, it was in the 90s. Like, they had every gimmick possible. Chromium covers, alternate versions of characters, futures versions of characters, clones, you name it. Right. It was the 90s. Clones.
Oh man. So at that time too, I mean, we'll have to go back and kind of, I mean, we're all kind of like, you know, trying to go back and remember. And of course our brains are trying to, you know, fill in the gaps, but, oh, I remember being devastated with the clone saga and how they said, oh, this isn't the real Spider-Man. You know, it's been a fake Spider-Man. I remember as a kid, that was the first time I was very upset about a comic book.
I wasn't heavily invested in the Spider-Man at the time. That was probably like my, cause that, it's like this like weird acetate cover or something, like the see-through, whatever. It was like the first time like I wanted to buy a Spider-Man book because it looked so cool. It had like all these spiders, and you open up, you can see through the cover. It was really cool. It's $5 though, but I bought it. Anyway, oh, man. It looked cool. So when I read this, I had the same experience. I'm just like, so the Spider-Man since the 60s isn't the real Spider-Man. Oh, this is just wonderful. And then I think I end up buying like Spider-Man Omega because I read in like Wizard Magazine, this is where they just say, we're sorry, none of that stuff you liked actually happened. If you liked it, it happened. If you didn't like it, it didn't happen. We're sorry. Here's an apology issue. And I stayed out of Spider-Man until the Ultimate Era. After that, basically.
Which is like a whole another, I think, there's two gray eras like around that time. Like Ultimate Spider-Man obviously changes. I don't know, it's like sort of a game changer in a lot of ways. In terms of just like, how do you rebuild a character or retell a story? Straczynski's Spider-Man run, I remember really liking back in the day. And of course, that's like the, you know, the infamous like 9/11 black cover. Mm-hmm. I think that's when he was doing that. So yeah, we've seen it all. We've gone through it all with the modern age of comics. So, and you know, I think it'll be interesting to see sort of what happens in the future. It seems crazy, right? I know that we even recently, even though this series is kind of focusing on superhero stuff up front, you know, hopefully we get to some other stuff like from Image, because I think, you know, we were talking too a while back about, you know, like that's where we probably focus a lot more than the superhero stuff is like Image. And just, it's like been insane for them the last couple of years. And it's really cool to see all this talent. They're just like, what, you got an idea? What, they're like the Netflix of comic books. They're like, you got an idea? Fuck it. Whatever. You can do it. We don't care. Let's just go.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, I think whatever Image is doing to lure in the best writers in the medium, they need to keep it up, because that's going to be their strategy. Wait for a writer to kind of break out from the big two, and then, you know, kind of lure them into the Image circle with this big, you know, like, hey, you get to keep the rights to a lot of the characters you're going to create, so come over here and, you know, eventually get to make some more money if your characters are good enough. So whatever strategy they've came up with, they need to keep sticking with that, because they're putting out some of the world's best books right now.
Yeah, and absolutely. And, you know, that just reminded me, you know, we, like I was saying, we've kind of lived through it all. We went through that. Like, we saw the Image brand born, you know, and it was once again full of 90s gimmicks and stuff like that. But
now, one of my other first memories in collecting is trying to get those Image number ones.
Oh, man.
I didn't have a local shop that I knew about as a kid at the time. My parents, they like to antique a lot, basically. So we were hitting up a lot of antique stores in the early 90s. And I remember trying to, like, I found one booth that had comic books, and they had, like, this one of your favorites, Youngblood number one, of course.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man.
Wildcats number one. Eventually I got my hands on that Spawn number one. And it was so much fun trying to, like, get these runs.
Right.
Those early Image books, even though looking back, they haven't aged that well. They're definitely like a good representation of like,
yep,
the best and worst of the 90s, though, if you mm-hmm. want to put it that way. But yeah, like pretty much like after I got done with my Superman phase, the next thing I wanted to really get is the Image stuff. And it was a lot of fun looking back. But nowadays you read some of them, maybe with the exception of like Wildcats and Gen 13, the Jim Lee stuff, which at least you're going to get great art out of there. But some of them, a little bit rough reads today, but I liked them back then.
Yeah, it was, it never synced with me at all. I tried so many times to get into those books, And I don't know. It just never clicked with me. Like, so I don't know. Maybe because I saw it for what it was, and it was just like, well, this is trying to be like X-Men. Why would I read this and not X-Men? But, no, you know, I don't know. Yeah. And maybe that's me being a little naive too and ignorant about it. I think
their main focus in the mid 90s was obviously on the art piece of it and the emphasizing the creativity of the artist. I mean, those are the Image founders. They were all artists. A couple of them were writers and artists, but that was their bread and butter, was their art. And once you got to about the year 2000, that's when you really saw the boom in getting writers and just creating these good written comic books and, you know, maybe having a little bit more artsy type of art. That probably doesn't make sense, but compared to like big, colorful action pouches everywhere art that, you know, you were used to in early Image.
Well, like the writer, I think, kind of evolved into like sort of the director, right? Of like, mm-hmm. or, you know, the collaboration of those two where, you know, it's like we can have a whole page of panels and not have a single written word. And it's the art that's telling the story, but you really, you know, that's driven by both the writer and the artist to help, you know, at least the good ones, right, to help convey that story. You know, just it eventually transformed into the modern medium it is today, where it's not just 15 bubbles like in one panel trying to describe every bit of action like how it used to be for decades. And you know, yeah, like that's sort of gone away quite a bit, you know, and I think probably better for the medium in a lot of ways. But, you know, not to say that still doesn't exist. There's definitely like, I think like Scott Snyder is probably a guy who might overwrite in times in some of his story arcs, but it's for the, you know, but I enjoy reading it. It's always pretty good.
Yeah, I'd always kind of say the same thing for like Brian Bendis. Especially like his 2000 stuff, I absolutely love that, like the Ultimate Spider-Man, Alias, all that. That guy can fill a whole page with speech bubbles.
Right. and it's good. It's interesting. Yeah. It's not. It's more about the character inner thoughts in a more intriguing way than, you know, sort of how it was in the past, which is like just describing every little detail. Like Peter Parker is walking down the street and he has to describe everything he's seen. It's like, no, the art can do that. This is a good sample of sort of like, you know, how we're going to talk about, you know, comics and the stories and the history. And you know, I think we'll just kind of wrap it up here and get on with the first episode, which is Josh Whedon's and Brian I always, or not Brian. Wait, yes, Brian. I
John Cassaday.
John?
John Cassaday.
Why do I want to say Brian? That's so wrong. I don't know. I don't know why that popped in my head. That must be, I'm thinking of somebody else. But yes, Joss and John. I wrote Joss and John so much today. I can't believe that happened. But whatever. Mine's in a different place. So we'll go ahead and wrap this up. And thanks, Carson. And I'll see you on episode one.
So yeah, I can't wait to talk about Astonishing X-Men and, you know, not only like how good of a read it was, but what it meant to us when it came out too, because it was a big deal back then.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And I'm going to love to get in into that with you. So, all right. I'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Spider-Man does whatever a spider can, spins a web any size.